10 days from now or whatever. I'm working on the material. I'm putting the finishing touches on it. And just to kind of prepare you for what it's going to be. As you see, I made a whole big booklet for this. Whereas with the First John class, I want to ask less questions and do a better job of kind of pointing things out to you. So the whole handout I'm going to give you will be 4 pages, I guess 2 sheets front and back. And it'll be a lot of additional readings and a lot of just kind of notes to say, I don't know, I'm kind of your safari guide. Hey, look over here, see this. And my goal really is to see the way that 1 John is connected to 2 John is connected, 3 John is connected to John the Gospel. And so it's going to be kind of a deep dive into the John's literature as we're finishing up Robert's teaching the book of John, and we'll start into his epistles. I want us to leave with a keen sense of the way they're all connected. And it's going to be kind of like, it's going to be even slower than this class. There's 7 chapters in 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, and we're taking 12 weeks to do it. So we're going to be moving very slowly, but I really think that there's enough in there that there will be lots to learn, lots to study. So, I don't know, get ready for that, and on Sunday, be looking for the handout for that. So, that is what I want to say on John class, or 1st John class, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John class. The other thing is we're finishing the book of Hosea this evening, and it's very exciting. One of the things that you will probably notice if you are not super familiar with the prophetic literature is almost all of the minor prophets end with something like this. We've seen a lot of judgment interspersed with hope, but all of these prophets are going to end on a big note of hope. And Hosea is no exception. We're going to see a lot of hope this evening, a lot of reversals from what we have been seeing thus far. And I want to highlight that as we discuss this evening. First, the chapter 14, kind of as a conclusion to the book, as a reversal of some of the judgments that are happening in the book. And then we'll take some time at the end of class to talk about both any sorts of concluding remarks that we want to make as a class about the themes, and then finally about application to our own lives. The parts that we're taking from, that we are taking from the book of Hosea. Because honestly, to me, it's not really worth it to study a book unless at the end of it, you leave with a sense that, okay, when I'm suffering this in my life, or when I really need a passage that's this, you know, I'm going to go back to Hosea chapter, 6, because that's really important to me, or whatever it is. And so, time for all of that in class, since we're only covering 1 chapter. So, let me begin by asking for some volunteers. I would like to get someone to read Hosea 14, 1 through 7, and then I will need also 3 people, one to summarize each of these sections. So, who would like to read? That's the easy one. 1 through 7. All right, Josh got the easy one.
Return, O Israel, to the Lord your God, for you have stumbled because of your iniquity. Take with you words and return to the Lord. Say to him, take away all iniquity except what is good, and we will pay with bulls and the vows of our lips. Assyria shall not save us. We will not ride on horses, and we will say no more, our God, to the work of our hands. In you the orphan finds mercy. I will heal their apostasy. I will love them freely, for my anger has turned from them. I will be like the dew to Israel. He shall blossom like the lily. He shall take root like the trees of Lebanon. His shoot shall spread out. His beauty shall be like the olive, and his fragrance like Lebanon. They shall return and dwell beneath my shadow. They shall flourish like the grain. They shall blossom like the vine. Their fame shall be like the wine of Lebanon.
Excellent. Thanks, Josh. All right, so I've broken these 7 verses up into 3 sections. The first 3 verses, who would like to tell us, what is it that we see going on in Hosea 14, 1 through 3?
Return to the Lord.
A return to the Lord, yes. Good answer. and then in verse 4, which really goes with 5 and 7, but 5 through 7 have, well, we'll do 5 through 7, because they have a metaphor that is running through all of them that I think binds them together. And then 4 is kind of the glue between 1 through 3 and 5 through 7. So let's do 5 through 7. Who would like to tell me what is it that we see in 5 through 7?
Return to
God's healing.
God's healing. Specifically, what's the metaphor he uses here? Although it definitely is healing. Yes. Think about fertility, about trees, about life and plant structure. Which, if you recall, Hosea's three children, we've got Lo-Ami, Lo-Ruhama, and Jezreel. Does anyone happen to remember what Jezreel means? It means the Lord will sow, which is very appropriate, and thus I have named the last section Jezreel. But I did this out of order from my PowerPoint, so I have to keep that hidden. Verse 4. What do we see in verse 4 that is the glue between this first section and the third section?
Well, God promises that he will forgive.
Yes, he will forgive. He will love them freely, love them spontaneously. One of the commentators I was reading used that as his translation. And I really like that. That like so much of God's love and God's action for his people, this is not a response necessarily to what Israel has done. They have not earned his love, but God is the fountain that that love comes from. He creates the love that pours out to them. He forgives them. He heals them. And then, as we said, he plants them. He creates. He turns them into a fruitful vine, into a fruitful people. And so, with that as a summary for these first seven verses, I have asked in this question one. And I could have put more than these four passages here, but these four really, I think, quite clearly, we find reversals in these seven verses of four different sections in the book of Hosea. So I put three of the four on my PowerPoint. Unfortunately, Hosea 8, 4 through 10 would not fit. So we'll start with Hosea 4 and 4, verse 5. So it says, that is really hard to read, I'm so sorry. Their deeds do not permit them to return to their God, for the spirit of whoredom is within them, and they know not the Lord. So what do we see in Hosea 14, 1 through 7, that is an explicit reversal of what we see in Hosea 5, 4?
Verse 1.
Yes, and verse 2 and verse 7. We see the word return several different times. This is very exciting, because as we've noted previously, Israel is really, really terrible. And they, even when God reaches out to them and tries to be their God for them, we'll see this in Hosea 7 as well, they turn against him. That their deeds, the way that they have chosen to live their life, would not allow them to return to God because they were so steeped in their idolatry and in their sin and in just all of their iniquity. And yet God comes in, especially in verse 4, and heals their apostasy. He makes it possible for their hearts to turn to him, to remove that spirit of whoredom and allow them to return. And so we see return as a repeated refrain going on in Hosea 14. It's very exciting. So how about the next one? Hosea 7, 10 through 13. It says, the pride of Israel testifies to his face, yet they do not return, there's that word again, to the Lord their God, nor seek him for all this. Ephraim is like a dove, silly and without sense, calling to Egypt, going to Assyria as they go. I will spread over them my net. I will bring them down like birds of the heavens. I will discipline them, according to the report made to the congregation. Woe to them, for they have strayed from me. Destruction to them, for they have rebelled against me. I would redeem them, but they speak lies against me. That last line, I would redeem them, but they speak lies against me, is what I was referring to a moment ago. Their deeds won't allow them to return. What God wants to do for them, they push against. But there's other things in this section besides returning, which we've already noted, that are reversed in Hosea 14. What do we see? Heal their apostasy, yeah. That they have this tendency to go after one nation after another, to go after all kinds of idols. They're going and all they're flitting back and forth all over the place, and God will heal their apostasy. He will give them the faithfulness that they are supposed to have, that he wants them to have.
Verse 3, the recognition that Assyria will not save us.
Yes. Yes, they're finally giving up their flitting back and forth ways and committing to the Lord. Robert, was that yours?
Yeah, no. In in chapter 14, verses 1 through 3, when he tells them to return to the Lord, he specifically tells them, you need to come with words, specific words, to offer to the Lord. And in 3 is the acknowledgement that Assyria, foreign nations are not going to save us. Their powerful horses are not going to save us. We shall no longer say that the works of our hands are our God. That's the reversal from chapter 7. They're going after nations. They're strong in themselves. They've got to recognize that's been messed up.
Yeah. I think that's all I have, although there could be more. I mean,
when you talk about Ephraim as like a dog, silly and without sense, you know, here we're talking about other ideas of nature that are productive. A senseless dove is not performing at what it was created to do.
Right.
Here we're talking about fragrances. We're talking about vines that are growing with production according to their intent.
Yes. And that is absolutely true for the dove, although it's even going to be more explicit when we get to 8 and 9. So we'll have to turn over to 8. Like I said, it wouldn't fit on the board. But who would like to read for us? Hosea 8, 4 through 10. All right, Bill.
They set up like kings, but not by me. They made princes, but I did not acknowledge them. From their silver and gold, they made idols for themselves that might be cut off. Your calf is rejected, O Samaria. My anger is aroused against them. How long until they attain to innocence? For from Israel, far from Israel, is even this. A workman made it, and it is not God. But the calf of Samaria shall be broken to pieces. They sow the wind and reap the whirlwind. The stalk has no bud, and it shall never produce meal. If it should produce, aliens would swallow it up. Israel is swallowed up. Not they are among the Gentiles, like a vessel in which is no pleasure. For they have gone up to Assyria, like a wild donkey alone by itself. Ephraim has hired lovers. Yes, though they have hired among nations, now I will gather them, and they shall sorrow a little because of the burden of the king of princes.
Excellent. Thank you, Bill. So we've already noted in chapter 7 this whole pursuing Assyria, and here it shows up again. In fact, Assyria is in lots of the chapters of Hosea. And here in chapter 14, we get a reversal. They send back Assyria. They're no longer going to pursue them. But there's some other things that we should note from this. And Josh led us into one of the really clear ones, I think, is that in 14, 5 through 7, we get this garden imagery, this fertility imagery. But in Hosea 8, that's total opposite of that. That there is no standing grain has no head, it will yield no flower. If it were to yield, strangers would devour it. That God is cursing the produce of their field in chapter 8, but in chapter 14, he's undoing the curse, which is very exciting. But there's more stuff. Yes, which is a neat point. That, coupled with the pushing off of Assyria, we see in chapter 14 both a reversal of the way that Israel is supposed to be responding and also a reversal of the judgment from God. And that makes perfect sense because those would go together. When Israel turns back to the Lord, God is gracious and he provides for them his blessings. And so, yes, like Eric was saying, there really is no acknowledgement of the Lord, no knowledge of God throughout. Like, there's a constant refrain that there is no knowledge of God. And yet we get to chapter 14, although that's not explicitly stated, the way that they are reacting to God is clearly showing a reversal of that no knowledge of God idea. Yes, terrific.
Also, I mean, to that same point, and specifically in verse 14, in you, the orphan finds mercy. Israel orphaned themselves by their own actions.
We have no king, we have no father. This cast off restraint.
Yeah. You know, in chapter 8, right. And then now here we are, the father now reacknowledging the maybe self-inflicted orphan, if you want to say such, here in chapter 14, and ultimately what we all have is mercy. Mm-hmm. And then he takes us back.
Yes, mercy. Yes,
well, Robert. Chapter 8, we also, around verse 6, that again it's talking about that they make gods by their own hands. And in chapter 8, God specifically tells them, but that is not God.
Right.
And so they've got to acknowledge that again in verse 14, chapter 14.
Yes.
This part of the silly dove, I think.
Yes. Yes. You see why I named the book The Silly Dove. All right. Well, then let's finish up here in chapter 9, and these are back on the board. Chapter 9, verses 15 and 16. Says, every evil of theirs is in Gilgal. There I began to hate them. Because of the wickedness of their deeds, I drove them out of my house. I will love them no more. All their princes are rebels. Ephraim is stricken. Their root is dried up. They shall bear no more fruit. Even though they give birth, I will put their beloved children to death. It's a dark statement. But we get more reversals. Some of the same ones that we've seen so far. This kind of fertility image, their root is dried up, they shall bear no more fruit, is reversed in chapter 14, like we've said several different times. But what about, I've noted here, hatred and God's ceasing of love. Do we see that returning in chapter 14?
Yeah, verse 4, if they heal themselves, I will love them freely.
Yes.
That's kind of a different image of I'll kill their children.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's pretty dark.
So all of this, as I've said, I think Hosea 14 is a phenomenal conclusion to the book, because so much of the failure of Israel and the judgment of God is turned on its head. As there is a returning to the Lord, as things are as they should be. And so, as we throw verse 8 into the mix, Hosea 14:8, O Ephraim, what have I to do with idols? It is I who answer and look after you. I am like an evergreen cypress. From me comes your fruit. So much about verse 8 to unpack. First, that God calls himself an evergreen cypress. And so there's this idea of, you know, God is forever, in bloom. He's like always a trustworthy plant. From me comes your fruit. So much in chapter 2, there was this idea that, in 10:1 also, that their gifts could be attributed to the Baals, to their lovers. And God says, no, it's for me. It's always for me. And God here reminds them, and they're in a proper relationship to understand that God is the source of their blessings. One of the commentators I was reading, and I have no way to fact check this, except just hours and hours of staring at all the Bible passages, says this is the only time in the Bible that God is compared to a tree. And that's kind of an interesting thing in light of the fact that the Asherah pole was a tree. And that here, as so often, God takes the images of the Baals, takes the images of other gods, and says, whatever you think they're doing for you, that's me. And so God takes over the idea of the fertility, the idea of all the things that those idols are supposed to be attributing, are supposed to be giving the people. He says, no, those are really from me. God is like an evergreen cypress. Yes?
And the tree that God is living.
Yes.
The tree that the Baals were from is
dead. Yes. So good.
And it can't help but make my mind go back to the tree of life.
Yes.
That's early on in all of this story of God and the creation and stuff, and man screwed that up.
Yes, and at the very end, the tree of life is again in the presence of God. So it is kind of, yes, I think that's a good connection to make. And so with that, We get to question two. Now, I have to say, there are not 11 verses in this chapter. I don't know where I got two extra verses. So I don't know why it says 7 through 11. But 7 through 9, really 7 through 8, there are several ways, and we don't have to, you know, get deep, deep into this. But in Hosea chapter 2, verses 2:14 through 3:5, there's a lot going on. God is reversing the names of the children. He is betrothing them to himself again. He is opening up giving her vineyards and making the valley of Achor a door of hope. And then ultimately, and we get to chapter 3, God is turning, redeeming his people again, and commanding faithfulness from them. But at the same time, he sends judgment on them that will lead them ultimately to seek him again. There's a lot that goes on in chapters two and three. But Hosea 14, especially 7 and 8, are really an undoing of, or not an undoing, but a fuller fulfillment of the seeds that were planted in Hosea 2 and 3. So let's take some time to talk to that. How is Hosea 14, 7 and 8, or really anywhere you want to go in 14, since these are the wrong verses, clearly, a fulfillment of Hosea 2, 14 through 35, or 3, 5. Yes, the people returned to the Lord. Absolutely.
They are humble.
Humble.
And penitent.
And penitent. Absolutely. A thing that God has wanted all along. A thing that God commanded of them. You know, I will betroth you to me in faithfulness and in mercy and in justice. And yet that required them to be those things to him as well. And to return to him and recognize their fault. Absolutely.
Like the adulterous actions of his wife in 14 and 8, they have to say, I don't have anything more to do with idols.
Yes.
You have to give up that adulterous condition.
Yes. And when they give that up, they receive a blessing, which is the same in both places. You know, God gives them vineyards, and here he gives them these various plant imageries that we've seen. See, I feel like there was another important one. Y'all can shout them out if you think there's another one. I got to look at my notes. Ah, yes. In chapter 2, verses 19 through 20, there is a picture of safety. 2:19 to 20, he says, I will betroth you to me forever. I will betroth you to me in righteousness, in justice, in steadfast love, and in mercy. I will betroth you to me in faithfulness, and you shall know the Lord. Great verse. I don't think that's what I was looking for at all. 18. Sorry, I led us to the wrong place. Anyway, 18 says, I will make for them a covenant, and on that day, with the beasts of the field, the birds of the heaven, the creeping things of the ground, I will abolish the bow and the sword and the war from the land, and I will make you lie down in safety. Yes, that is what I was looking for. Obviously, here we see some connection to Isaiah 2, Micah 4, the idea of the mountain house of the Lord and, you know, abolishing war. But in Hosea 14, we get another picture of safety and security, as we've already noted, under this evergreen tree in verse 8. And in verse 7 also, that they will dwell beneath my shadow. That here we see God is protecting them. They are dwelling in his shadow. They are dwelling in safety and in security. God is taking care of them. And in both places, we see that kind of thing take place. Yes, Robert?
It's maybe stretching it a little bit with the way my mind thinks.
I love it.
You've got Hosea's family is blessed when it's in the proper relationship in that family unit, faithfulness. Mm-hmm. In the nation, Ephraim, so many times, their blessings come from that faithful relationship with God, not adultery.
Yes.
And then in chapter 14 and verse 8, the very last line strikes me, your fruit is found in me.
Yes.
This is where the sustenance comes from.
Yes.
Those relationships all the way around.
Awesome. So, one more question of fulfillment, and then we'll move into just sort of the end here. So in question 3, I asked, how is Hosea 14, 1 through 7, a fulfillment of Hosea 6, 1 through 3? So in Hosea 6, 1 through 3, we've been saying, this seems to be a statement that is not genuine from the people of Israel, because immediately it's negated by God. He says, you don't really mean that. But I think in Hosea 14, we find really, truly the spirit of what should have been behind Hosea 6, 1 through 3, where God says, come, or where the people say, come, let us return to the Lord, for he has torn us that he may heal us. He has struck us down and he will bind us up. After 2 days he will revive us, on the third day he will raise us up that we may live before him. Let us know, let us press on to know the Lord. His going out is sure as the dawn. He will come to us as the showers, as the spring rains that water the earth. How is this fulfilled in chapter 14?
They do those things, but with sincerity.
With sincerity,
they
absolutely.
They really are doing it instead of just lip service.
Yes, and they bring him the vows of their lips. They pay, you know, their offerings. But it, as you said, there's legitimacy behind it. And they do get the healing that is foreshadowed. But I guess whatever the positive version of foreshadowing is in Hosea 6. In verse 3, that God blesses them like the showers. Or later on in chapter 6, he talks about them being fickle like the dew. And yet God tells them that he will be to them like the dew. And there's this idea of just God covering them, God giving them what they need to flourish. That in all of these things, they should have known this to be true. And here in chapter 14, we get a picture of a people of God that truly believe these things and truly receive these benefits from God. So, finally, then, let me just say, verse 9 of Hosea 14 is a conclusion to the entire book. He says, whoever is wise, let him understand these things. Whoever is discerning, let him know them. For the ways of the Lord are right, and the upright walk in them, but transgressors stumble in them. He says, all of these things that I've said, it's going to take some wisdom and discerning. But if you have that, these will be a blessing to you. However, if you don't, you're going to stumble over them. The additional readings for this, I gave 1 Corinthians 1:23 and 2 Corinthians 2:16. Both images of people who are going to see the gospel or see the message of the truth, and they're going to say, no, that's not for me. They're going to stumble over them because they don't have the wisdom to see what we ought to see. But Hosea, or the editor, or whoever wrote these words for us here at the end, wants us to be the kind of people who have the wisdom to understand the message of this book. And we've spent a good section of class kind of reviewing as we go through chapter 14, because, as I said, chapter 14 makes a very nice conclusion to the book. But I wanted to open it up here. Are there major themes of the book, or even minor themes, that we have not covered as we've kind of gone back through and talked about how chapter 14 is a fulfillment and an undoing of some of the other things that Hosea says? What are the takeaways from the book that we need to talk about still? Yes, Josh.
I don't know if they're necessarily, well, they are takeaways from the book, perhaps, but even when we read that concluding verse, very reminiscent of Moses' departing words to the children of Israel before they ever enter this blessed land. Walk in the ways of the Lord. Do what he tells you to do. You will prosper. If you do not, you will stumble.
Yes.
And this is a fulfillment not only of the book, but of everything that the Lord has been telling these people from the very point to where he established this.
Yeah, that's very good. Hosea, most of the prophets, but especially some of these early Hosea, Micah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Zechariah. I guess Zechariah's at the end. You know what? Most of the minor prophets. Strong connections with the, especially the book of Deuteronomy. And that kind of idea that if you do well, you will be blessed. If you do not, you will be cursed. And the faithfulness of God, the oneness of God, all of these things that are really important in the book of Deuteronomy come to be really important in the prophets, and Hosea is no exception. Absolutely. Yes. Yes, Robert.
In 14, as being kind of a summary conclusion, if you put your finger at verse 4 of chapter 14, but you go back to chapter 11 and verse 7, the same concept is there. 11:7, my people are bent on backsliding from me. Though they call to the Most High, none of them exalt him. And then when you get to chapter 14 and verse 4, the same terminology. I will heal their backsliding. I will love them freely, for my anger has turned away from them, because in verses 1, 2, and 3, they return to God and recognize that all those things they've been trying to do are worthless.
Yes.
One big takeaway for me is that God is patient.
God is so patient.
After all that happened, and he was still there with open arms, ready to take them back if they would do the right thing.
I'm going to talk a little bit about that on Sunday in my sermon, but like scandalously patient. Like if you looked at him, you'd be like, why are you being this patient? Like surely you should, like, let's get some consequences up in here.
Definitely, yeah, along that same path, just patience as it is tied to his law for people. As we were reading chapter 14 aloud, I just couldn't help but think that, while it seems like God is, because we're human, we tend to think, retribution and justice. but the very idea of who God is he did all this to them because he wanted to conclude in this way that we see in 14. It wasn't that he enjoyed punishing them or he had any sort of fulfillment in doing that. I mean, nor does he need any of them to be justified in anything.
Yeah.
Because he loves them. And I guess, and I've said this before, but now as a parent, not that I would ever compare myself to God, I can kind of start to understand that a little better.
Yeah. I think that's why God gives us, marriage, so we can understand his love for Israel. I think that's why he gives us the opportunity to be parents, to be all of these roles, that he is all of them, so that we can get a little window into him. I just want to say real quick another theme that's kind of touched on in chapter 8, where God says, I am like an evergreen cypress, from me comes your fruit. Constantly in this book, we see Israel forgetting that their blessings come from God, and God having to remind them that he is the source of their blessings. I think it's a big takeaway from the book of Hosea. Let me ask then question 5, another one of my very favorite questions in the book, because I think it really takes it home for us. What are you taking with you from this study? Like, when you look back on the book of Hosea, or like, when you're in some situation in your life, you say, oh, there's that passage in Hosea. What's that passage in Hosea? Tell me. I want to know. What are you taking away from this study in terms of the text?
Don't be self-reliant, depending on God.
Yes. But I'm asking more specifically, what are the verses, what are the chapters, what are the sections that are really going to stick with you? That's a good answer, though, and it fits with question 4.
I like 12:6. So you, by the help of your God, return, hold fast to love and justice, and wait continually for your God. He's the one that's going to help me return, no matter how far I've fallen. He's the one that's going to help and with love and his mercy, and that I just have to wait for him, his time.
Yes. His timing. That's hard. Yeah, Bill.
I like verse 9.
14?
Yes. Who is wise, let him understand these things. Who is prudent, let him know them. For the ways of the Lord are right. The righteous walk in them, but transgressors stumble in them. He identifies that he will be there for us. Mm-hmm. Period. Mm-hmm. And we as Christians have that chance when we stumble to come back. And I think this whole thing talks about how Israel did that and God still loved them and told them, I'm going to love you the whole time.
Absolutely.
And yet it ends up right there at that last one.
Yeah. Robert.
Chapter 7, verse 2.
7:2. It's a scary verse.
Yeah, we try to downplay that. We push that into the back of our minds. That's not in our thought process. God knows it. You know, we live our lives like we're invisible to God.
Yeah.
11:3 and 4.
Oh, I love 11, but yes, 3 and 4. What I mean, I've already said, I love this idea of God helping Israel to walk. You know, it's just beautiful. Is that, or is there something else in there?
No, that's just what it tells us about his nature and his feeling.
Yes.
It's a beautiful passage.
So, yeah. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed studying Hosea with you guys. I hope that you have gotten a fraction of what I got out of it. It's a great book, and it is full of hope, but it's also full of warnings. And we got to remember that. So, I'm excited to start 1 John with you guys in 10 days. Have a great evening.